You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Episode 2 of the D-backs Hot Stove Podcast. Welcome to Thoughts for Your Thoughts with Gary Merbles. I'm Mike Farron. No, it's Steve Berthiaume, the television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hello, Mike.
Managed to make it away from the estate for the weekend, the compound, to come by.
Currently under construction. I'm here in your spacious studio here with Pops the dog.
Pops the dog will undoubtedly make his presence felt in just a little bit. Well, he has to you. He's basically he's sitting in your lap.
Snuggled up nicely, in fact, on this giant chair, which dominates your broadcast slash office in the new house.
And Beat Laboratory. I think that's the other.
That's true.
We do here. We do.
There's an odd collection, if I may paint a scene for the listener.
Please do.
None of the items in here seem to be related. There's an Archie Bradley bobblehead still in its box for some reason. There's is that a Blake Snell bobblehead up there? Also,
no, it's a Chris Archer.
Oh, old Chris Archer Rays bobblehead still in its box, and there's a big blue baseball cap that just says Ribs, which
was
very appropriate for those of us that have worked alongside you low these many years.
Anyway, I made Ribs last night. That was a gift from Craig Goldstein, who's the managing editor of Baseball Prospectus. Mm-hmm. Because when Kingsford did a set of ads about a year and a half ago with Bartolo Colon, Bart was wearing a hat that just said Ribs, and Craig found that and bought it for me. So that is my Ribs hat.
Well, if there's anyone out there to endorse Ribs other than yourself, it's definitely Big Sexy.
I had to compete with him for that nickname. How are you? How is your winter season going other than dealing with construction?
We're doing some projects at the house, which is loud and obtrusive, but much like this show. And it's been fun. I listen to you and Duke in your other job on the radio when I walk the dog, Jon Snow, every morning. Watching a lot of Parks and Rec, some binge watching. The Crown is back on, just putting my feet up, enjoying being at home. Which is a big deal. I mean, people I don't think realize how much time in your job, my job, the players' jobs, the managers, coaches, everybody, mm-hmm. we are away from home. So it's just so nice. We're so blessed to live here where the weather is beautiful in the off-season, our off-season. It's just nice to be home and enjoy it. It's great.
I'm a little tired of these mid-50s and rain, though.
I know, it's freezing, isn't it?
Moved to Arizona so I wouldn't have to deal with this anymore.
I was promised 70 and 80 and sunshine.
My father-in-law is down visiting from Seattle and was complaining about the weather here last winter. He was down for 2 months, and he said, we only had 8 to 10 70-degree days. I said, how many 70-degree days were there in Seattle over the course of those 2 months? He didn't like that.
And I was watching the Patriots game yesterday, and I saw the miserable weather they were playing in while they had beat the Cowboys, and I thought, it's better here.
It's good here. It has been quiet, at least on the player side so far for the Diamondbacks this winter. They've yet to make a significant major league acquisition, but we are getting closer to the winter meetings. In fact, this is the second installment of this podcast. The third one will come from San Diego and the winter meetings. But it certainly seems like there have been plenty of conversations, and I think the thing that stands out in everything that everybody I've talked to is that the Diamondbacks feel like last year was a building block season and that they want to get better going into 2020. This is a team that is looking to compete for a postseason berth next year.
I think they've done a remarkable job staying relevant, staying competitive. 85 wins was surprising considering all the people that left. I heard you talking about that with Peter Gammons earlier. More wins than the Red Sox. Who saw that coming this year? Impressive. There's so many different directions in which they can go. I think so much of it depends on whether Steven Souza Jr. is back. Is Jake Lamb back? Is Robbie Ray back? Where will Ketel Marte play full-time? You might obviously play both, but the majority of time spent either in center field or at second base. So there's so many forks in this road at this point, it's hard to pick a direction until they take a step one way or the other.
Yeah, the biggest... I guess deadline that's coming up is December 2nd is the tender deadline.
Yeah,
and that's when you have to tender contracts to players that are on your 40-man roster or they become free agents. And you're going to hear a lot of speculation in the next week about a couple of key guys in that mix. that you mentioned, and Souza and Lamb in particular, and whether or not, you know, what ends up happening with them. So there are some deadlines that are coming up, and that tends to get some movement. I saw, you know, while we're recording this, the Rays just agreed to a contract with Mike Zunino, who had been somebody who was seen as a non-tender candidate. So,
well, they just lost Darnaud, so that makes
right,
sense.
Right, they lost him in free agency, so yeah. He didn't have a particularly great year last year, did Zunino, but he was also plagued by injuries, and so they get a new deal done, and so you'll see that be a deadline. I would not be surprised as if we get into, you know, this weekend and the first part of next week, you start to see a few moves. I don't think anything major is coming quite yet, but we are kind of setting up for the winter meetings to be interesting this year, which they haven't been for the last couple for most teams.
A little more activity at this point in the calendar than we've seen the last couple
Thank
of
you,
years.
Thank you, Braves.
Which is, yes. That's it's a little bit refreshing to have something to talk about in that regard, and hopefully that's a sign that the compass is pointed back in the right direction in terms of a busy offseason and maybe people trying to get things done earlier in the year. Thanks, Alex Anthopoulos, for giving some folks on the radio something to talk about. But, you know, those decisions are so critical, whether they've already been made or not. They haven't been announced, certainly, but I'm sure they have an idea of where they want to go. But can you count on Steven Souza Jr. being healthy and playing 140 or so games in right field every day? They haven't been able to do that through no fault of Stevens the last 2 years. So if you count on that, is that a risk for a guy that hasn't been able to play to a couple of two fluke injuries? If Escobar is the third baseman, then where does that leave Jake Lamb, considering what Christian Walker showed us last year at first base? If you decide to non-tender both of those guys, you figure to save in arbitration money somewhere between $9 and $10 million. So there are two key questions with two 30-homer bats that you've got to decide. Are they part of 2020, or are we moving on and spending that money elsewhere? Do you move Robbie Ray right now? Is his trade value high enough to make that a smart decision, considering the depth you have in the rotation? There's a lot of directions in which they can go. It's very, very interesting. And some of these are really tough calls.
You know, and I have a little bit of bias in this, obviously, because, you know, we're around the Diamondbacks all the time. But I feel like that their winter is potentially one of the most interesting of teams across baseball. And for all those reasons that you laid out, they have flexibility to be able to do several different things, to be able to make a myriad of moves. They have a farm system that is improving significantly. We're going to talk to Eric Longenhagen a little bit later. I had a conversation with him today, Tempe's own. He's the lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs, or as they like to call him, the lead prospect analyst.
He wrote a tremendous breakdown and write-up of the Diamondbacks minor league system, which you can read at Fangraphs.com.
47 prospects.
Gives you a breakdown of everybody. Super, super interesting. I would encourage everyone listening to this to go to Fangraphs and read Eric's stuff, which is outstanding.
And to stick around for the second half of this podcast.
There's that, too.
We interview him and talk a lot about those guys. But so they have some depth. They have some guys that are going to be here in the relatively near future, too. Andy Young, who just got added to the 40-man roster, probably factors into the plans. Dalton Varsho, who suffered a pretty significant sprained ankle in the Premier 12 tournament, a grade 3 sprain. He's expected to be ready in spring training, but he's a guy who had an excellent offensive season in the Southern League. He was catching and playing outfield. He played center field even in the Premier 12 tournament, which is an Olympic qualifier that the U.S. Made it to the semifinals in. And so he's a guy that's probably going to be part of the mix, you would think, at some point this coming season. So you're starting to get some returns on the investment in drafting and player development that the Diamondbacks have had over the last 3 years. And it's the arrow is really pointing up. I mean, Jeff Passan on the podcast 2 weeks ago, he said he thought within the next 3 years, we're talking about the Diamondbacks as one of the top five franchises in baseball. And that's I don't think he was just saying it because he was on a D-backs podcast. I think he really firmly believes that, and things are certainly trending in the right direction, but we're not necessarily focused on the future. Obviously they're focused on the future, but this is a team that needs to make improvements for 2020. And I love the fact that they haven't decided to punt any of these years, and that they view this year as, you know, if they're not, even if they don't catch the Dodgers, that there are ways into the postseason by winning the wild card. Hell, the Nationals just won the World Series as a wild card team. You know, it's better to be in the dance than not invited at all.
Well, look at what they've done while restructuring the entire organization top to bottom in terms of the on-field personnel. Playoff spot 2017, leading the division going into September in 2018, a near miss this season when they were really probably playing two bats shy most of the year because of some of the injuries they had. It's remarkable that they were able to keep it that competitive. So the term that you read about that Mike and his group has done is they've thread the needle. You know, they've managed to do both, rebuild the organization top to bottom and remain competitive. Now, I just finished reading Alex Speer's terrific book, Homegrown.
Yeah, very good.
About Mike and Amiel and JP and everybody that was in the Red Sox system when they drafted Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley and Andrew Benintendi and that whole group and how that group came up to eventually win a World Series. The term that you read a lot in that book was bridge year. Is this, do you think, now a bridge year doesn't imply you're throwing the year away or you're punting by any stretch, but you're trying to get to that group that you just mentioned that will be here in the next several years while maintaining a competitive team on the field. So is this a bridge year? Is this a transition year? Or is it just, are we just picking words that don't really mean anything?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think you could look at it as a bridge year, although I think you could look at last year as a bridge year in a lot of respects, right? You could look at it as being a season where you were bridging to, you know, the future competitiveness and what the next core was going to be. And, you know, as much as it stings losing Zach Greinke from the roster, being able to take and reinvest some of the money from that contract potentially into players this winter, you know, would help. So I think we're in a bridge period. I mean, we're not all the way to that next core of players that's coming through the system. Right. I mean, we're still probably a couple years away from that. I mean, Christian Robinson realistically is several years away. Alec Thomas is probably 2 years away. We mentioned Varsho's close, and Perdomo is probably a couple of years away. So you still are getting to that. But I don't know that they necessarily view this season as a bridge year in the same way that last year felt. At least that's a perception I get. I think they want to be able to make an impact. I mean, they've got a good core of starting pitchers. They have a decent bullpen core. Mm-hmm. Bullpen had a really miserable May. And outside of that, they were pretty good. Statistically, they were pretty solid. They Absolutely. Weren't a top-tier bullpen, although Archie really pitched well the last couple months of the year. But they were solid. And the lineup has some key pieces. And obviously, Marte had an MVP-caliber season. It was cool to see him finish fourth there. Escobar had a great year. A lot to build on from Kelly and Walker and Ahmed. And I think you can try and augment that group, hopefully with a healthy David Peralta too. And if you can create more position player depth and more offense, I think you really feel like you're not that far away from where Milwaukee was or where the Cubs were, or any of those teams that were in the Mets and all those teams that were kind of in that same group, either in that second wild card spot or just outside it. And even, you know, Washington won, 91 games. They were a much better team than that from about the end of May on. They were excellent. I think there's that feeling that, okay, we're you know, it may not be pushing all your chips into the middle right now to try and acquire players for a one-season run, but it's going to be acquiring players to try and make a run at a postseason berth. So I think it's a little bit different than a bridge year in that regard.
You've also got to make decisions. You mentioned Nick. The number of contracts, the number of players that become free agents after the 2020 season is remarkable. So you've got some long-term decisions to make as well that do tie into the 2020 season, notably Nick Ahmed and David Peralta.
Yeah.
Do you extend Nick Ahmed? And Robbie Ray. What do you do with the freight train? Hopefully he's back healthy after that shoulder problem that really washed out most of his year. But he's 1 year away from walking, as is Nick. Those are two critical decisions to go along with Souza and Lamb. So really, you're looking up and down the roster, with the exception of Carson Kelly and Eduardo Escobar and Ketel Marte. And forgive me if I'm leaving anybody out, but those
Christian
are the,
Walker is the other
those
one,
are the only guys that you know are going to be here for the next several years. So, boy, there's a lot of key decisions to make. Now, you mentioned the other group. There's that core group that came up through the minor league system several years ago that has moved on. Chris Owen, the group that came up together, CO, AJ Pollock, Patrick Corbin, Goldie, that whole group really did come up together. They basically got to the major leagues at the same time. They achieved success at the same time. Now that group has moved on, and we're trying to get to this next group.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too. I mean, obviously, this was the most significant draft that the Diamondbacks have had in a decade since the Pollock-Goldschmidt draft. And at least in terms of the number of high picks that they had. And really, I mean, you could say 2011, too, because Archie and Bauer were both top 10 picks that year. But there were a number of players that they needed to add to the organization, and they feel like they've done quite well. And it's been, again, like it's a lot can happen between now and the major leagues, but the early returns have been very positive on that draft. So you're right. I think that they're trying to build a core of competitiveness for the next several years it comes through the minor leagues. And so I don't think you would see any of the names that you've heard of, you know, the Christian Robinsons or the Geraldo Perdomos or the Dalton Varshos or any of those guys discussed in trade capabilities. But I am curious to see if there are other prospects, because they are deeper, that they might be willing to trade for major league help. And listen, I think a year ago we would have been shocked if Jazz Chisholm was included in a trade. And obviously that one, looks like it might work out all right for the Diamondbacks. Zach Gallen is pretty good. And you know, hopefully, you know, for Jazz's sake and for the Marlins, Jazz goes on to have a very, very good career. I love Jazz Chisholm. Great kid. And, he's certainly a talented player. But I think that's where it's going to be interesting to see where some of those decisions come from. And some of that's affected by, you know, if you were to extend, say, Nick Ahmed. I think from David Peralta's standpoint, I don't know if it makes much sense from his standpoint to be looking for a contract extension right now. Even you're coming off a season where you're injured, you want to prove that you're healthy and back to the form when you were a Silver Slugger in 2018.
You mentioned Tampa Bay and their catching situation. Of course, they have Michael Perez over there. I think this front office has been a little they haven't really traded any of their top prospects. I mean, Marcus Wilson, for example, it goes to the Red Sox. Perez goes to Tampa Bay. At what point are they going to trade somebody like Jazz Chisholm? That was the first sign. I mean, they got a very young, controllable pitcher in return. So that, in terms of your future, might be a little bit of a wash in terms of numbers of years you control and everything like that. But when are they going to take one of these big names and trade them, or will they ever? They haven't been willing to do that yet. And if you do let Souza go and Lamb go, or trade Robbie Ray or trade David Peralta or whatever you want to do, you're going to have to replace some of those guys. And that might mean you might have to trade one of those names on Eric's list where you go, ooh. That they've never done that yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they did it with Jazz, which is
right.
You know, that was a really unique trade. It was basically a prospect for prospect.
Yes, you
deal,
did. You didn't get a 29-year-old outfielder.
No.
Yeah, that's my point.
I mean, I think when you're looking at that, I mean, I think you know, it's kind of like you know when the time is right. You know, that it would seem unlikely unless you're going to end up with, a core player who you're going to have under team control or contract for 5+ years, I don't think that you necessarily view that as a possibility this winter. I think you're much more likely to augment in free agency, or trades are going to be, even if you feel like it's a quality player, it's going to be somebody that you bring in who's a little bit shorter term that's not going to cost you a player in that regard. I think it's when you get to the point of needing to be pushed over the top, I think that's where you get. Now, you know, let's say they go out and make a bunch of moves, improve the offense, get more consistent offensively. The pitching's pretty good. The bullpen's good. They're in a position where they're competing with the Dodgers in July 28th, and they're fighting for the division title. I think maybe then is the time that you start talking about it, because I think they also are mindful of the fact that you only get so many bites at the apple, and when you have a chance to win the World Series, and which means making the playoffs and going on, then you have to take advantage of that.
And he's done that with JD, and he did it with Eduardo Escobar.
Yes, and I think specifically with the JD deal, you know, that was in a position where you felt like that team was really good, even though they weren't going to win the division, and had a good chance to win the wild card game and at least push the Dodgers. And so, you know, the next year, they made a lot of trades. Remember, they added a ton of personnel in 2018. And Escobar was obviously the big one, and retaining him was huge. But they made a bunch of moves to try and be in that mix. But I think, you know, they also learned, I don't want to say learned, I think they knew this already, but that team ended up folding in September. Yeah. And so it gives you a better perspective on how rare the opportunities actually are to make the postseason. So I think when they're in a position to be able to win, they're absolutely going to augment the roster over the course of the season. Yeah. But I would not say that this offseason is not that time. It might be in July. It might be next winter. It might be the next July. But I would think that at some point they're going to push in to make that deal that changes the complexion of the team in the same way the J.D. Martinez deal did.
I think they've been very good, and I think Mike has said this publicly a number of times. Let's wait right now. Let's see where we are. And if it makes sense at that particular moment, we'll do what we have to do to get into the postseason. Yeah. And they've been very aggressive, notably with the J.D. Martinez deal and the Eduardo Escobar acquisition. When they're there and they smell it and they think they got a chance, they are aggressive, and I think they should get a lot of credit for that.
Rest of the division, just real quick, Dodgers are getting linked to a lot of big names, but we haven't seen them spend in free agency on them. I would not be surprised if they go down the trade route. They have a lot of players that are kind of duplicate players that would be of interest to other teams. We've heard Corey Seager's name a little bit. Wouldn't be surprised if Max Muncy, if it got them the right piece yet. But we haven't seen the Dodgers be super aggressive in free agency for guys that aren't their own. AJ was about the most aggressive they've been on somebody.
It's interesting that their postseason was a big failure for them. I'm not trying to be snarky about that, but with the number
they won 107
right,
games.
You win 107 games, your expectations are sky high, and then you sink.
I'm shocked you weren't snarky when you had a chance to be about the Dodgers.
It wasn't easy, but I think I pulled it off without any help from you.
Thread the needle, Mike Hazen?
But, you know, that mix, I think with every organization, you in any sport, you reach a point where you go, okay, this mix is really good. They won a lot of games, but we didn't end up where we wanted to go, and we got to change it. And I think the Cubs are doing that to some degree, or at least that's been discussed as well. Are the Cubs going to move Baez? Are they going to move Bryant? What are they going to do to shake things up? Theo's been fairly public about that. The Dodgers less so. But I think those two teams have a lot in common in that regard this winter. The way the two teams are constructed hasn't quite worked, and they probably need to make a fairly significant change. Do you move Muncy? Do you punt on Seager? Jock Peterson, I think, only has 1 year left, and he's basically a platoon player anyway. AJ, the acquisition, he's not going to be your everyday center fielder. We knew that, I think, when they signed him. I don't see AJ Pollock being a major league center fielder for 3 more years after this one. They already started moving him to a corner outfield spot anyway. I think they have to change that mix. Kenley Jansen's not the same guy he was. The starting pitching is fine, but I think they do need to make some significant changes.
Giants are obviously in a transition as well. They might lose Madison Bumgarner, which will look unusual, not seeing him pitch against the Diamondbacks in that first homestand of the year. Padres are another one of those teams that's really, really interesting because they kind of need to start putting it together. Their owners made that known that they've it's been a decade since they've had a winning record, and they have, in the words of super agent Scott Boras, have a lot of hot talent
there
lava that they haven't turned into major league rock yet.
Hashtag hot talent lava. Well, the owner said, look, if we don't win next year, everybody's head is on the block, including mine.
Right. I don't think his is going to be on the block.
No.
I think Ron Fowler's pretty safe.
But they have so much currency in terms of prospects if you want to go make some major changes and supplement the money that they have put into Hosmer and Machado and everybody else. Boy, that's like $500 million right there. They have a lot of prospects if they want to get aggressive, and we know that Preller's aggressive. They have a lot of money to play with in terms of their minor league system.
And the other team in the division, obviously Colorado, which had a really disappointing season and have said that they're not going to spend any money. They have to fix their offense and fix their rotation and fix their bullpen. Now, I like their starters. I think a couple of guys had down years, and I think that they can bounce back behind Gray and Marquez. Freeland is not as bad as he was last year.
I think they'll be okay.
No, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming. And I think things snowball on you in that ballpark, too.
Literally.
Thank you.
That's another.
You're making skiing jokes.
That's another example of
taking something too literally.
No, of a franchise that had a really good group of players.
Yeah,
but it didn't get them to where they thought or hoped they would go, and now they're going to make some changes. Like they've already moved on from certain guys. Blackman's at a corner outfield spot, still very productive. But Story, that all the money for Arenado, that group may have gotten them as far as they can go.
Well, and the other part of it is that their contract situation is really rough. Wade Davis has a vesting option for 2021 that vested like 30 games finished. So even though he's, you know, he was very good away from Coors, he was terrible at Coors Field last year, it's tough to trade him. You know, Charlie Blackman, if they wanted to entertain the idea of moving him, I think there would be a market for Charlie Blackman because he's still a very good hitter.
Oh, yeah.
But he's got player options on the back end of his deal that in essence guarantee him $73 million over the next 4 years. And I'm not sure that people view him necessarily as being that player 2 years down the road. Now, I personally, I think Blackman, if he were to move to first base, would be just fine. He's played it a little bit in the past, and I think he certainly would be productive there if a team wanted to take a chance on him. But Colorado would also be weakening their roster because they really only have three consistent offensive performers in Blackman, Arenado, and Story. And yeah. Story's getting, hard to believe, right? But Story's getting close to free agency. I mean, he's got 4 years of service time now, and he's 2 years away from being a free agent and is obviously a key guy. So they're in a really, really weird state of flux where they're locked into the contracts they have, and they don't necessarily have a chance to move guys around to free up money to address the issues they have.
And John Gray shows flashes of being that guy, the real ace, and then he kind of he'll have a nice run where he'll go, you know, 6-8 weeks and be really, really good, and then suddenly he just kind of goes away. He's not been able to be that consistent number one. I think that's a big problem for him, for them as well. But I think that group has taken them as far as they can go. They need to make some changes. And plus, when you're talking about acquiring a player from that Rockies team, you got to start looking at the home road splits. I don't want to make too much of it, but sometimes you're looking at a 300 or 400 point difference in OPS. And some of those numbers are jarring when you really analyze them. You know, if we trade for, say, Charlie Blackman, Team X, what's he going to do for us at our ballpark? Because the numbers on the road for Charlie Blackman are pretty pedestrian compared to the numbers at Coors Field, and that's the same with some of the other guys on that club.
I've got a couple of announcements for you.
Oh, I love announcements. What do you got?
Would you like to start with one that allows you to exercise your right to vote, or one that involves you spending money?
I'll go with A, considering the way my off season is gone.
MLB has started its first ever all MLB team. Have you seen this? This was unveiled on Monday.
And Eduardo Escobar and Ketel Marte are on the list.
They are. MLB.com/all MLB is the place that you can go to vote. So they basically took stars from both leagues and are creating a postseason All-Star team for the first time. I think it's a really cool idea. I like it. I love that it's fan vote, kind of like the All-Star game. You can vote, once every 24 hours. Voting ends at 3 o'clock Arizona time on December 3rd. The stats are the focus of the vote. They're for the regular season on the site. You can see them all there, but they have everybody at the positions. And, Ketel and Escobar are both on that list of players you could vote for. So it's really, really cool. MLB.com/all MLB is the spot to be able to get it. Or if you want to look at it in Spanish, it's lasmayores.com/todo MLB.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's good news, right? That's cool. Here is where I would like to get you to part with some of your money. You ready for this?
Awkward pause.
It's not the first time that you've had trouble reaching into your pocket to pay for something. Starting on Black Friday, which is today, the day this podcast comes out, the D-backs will have a special holiday package available for you through Monday. D-backs.com/holiday. $99.
Oh, the summer pass.
Gets you but it's a spring pass. March, April, May. Tickets to all 31 home games. That's almost half the schedule. 31 home games, $99, dbacks.com/holiday. You can get it for, including opening day.
That pass program has been amazing.
Really cool. It's sold out that.
It's like having a bus pass, you know, go to the game. Because you don't have to worry about, okay, we have tickets for Wednesday. Can everybody do Wednesday? And then stuff comes up and you can't go and you got to eat the tickets and you're upset about that. Well, just go Thursday. We got the pass. We'll go the next day. It's so convenient for everybody to use. It's a great idea. It's been a huge success.
So this is going to be great for a stocking stuffer or for Hanukkah or a holiday gift. dbacks.com/holiday, $99 per ticket, 31 home games. You get the pass. I think there's options to be able to upgrade usually, you know, within the games. You can't, the pass isn't transferable, so you can't be handed it back and forth to people. But it's pretty cool. And we'd love to see you at the ballpark, because I'll tell you what, my favorite game this past season was that 50,000 fan.
It was awesome.
Mexican Pacific League night against the Dodgers, which was a huge win, and all the excitement in the place. When Chase Field is full, it is really, really fun, and we'd love to see you there.
I love having the bands in the outfield.
Yes.
That was so awesome. It was so much fun. They played between innings, created great atmosphere. It was really, really fun to be there. So I hope to see that a lot more next year.
Do you think we could start a band to play in the middle of games?
Do you play an instrument?
I think we could get out there. I play the electric spoons, and we can get you on a kazoo.
I'll be like Davy Jones on the Monkees. I'll just stand in front with a tambourine. Yeah. Last Train to Clarksville with Leo Gilmartin.
Will Leo wear the hat like Mike Nesmith? See, here's the thing: is we're so
I used
good
to at love Mike Nesmith.
He was
I had that hat.
Did you really?
I wore it all the time because I wanted to be like Mike Nesmith.
I'm a little concerned that our references might be too dated for our audience. You see, there is this band that was a takeoff of the Beatles called the Monkees, and they had a TV show.
Yeah, much like our show, it was completely fraudulent. Just people making up stuff. Right? Wasn't that the big scandal?
Yeah, I think that was.
And then Mike Nesmith got so upset he just walked because he wanted to play his music, which apparently was not very good. People didn't like it. I don't know.
It's true.
Brought the whole show to a halt.
They had a whole bunch of Brill Building writers, I believe. Neil Diamond wrote their biggest hit.
It's amazing with everything that's on streaming now. We were talking about Parks and Rec earlier, that the Monkees isn't up there somewhere. On Hulu or one of those?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised.
Yeah,
it's my wife's favorite TV show of all time.
The Monkees is?
Yeah, she
Way
loves
to go,
the Monkees.
Erica.
And she's a big like Beatles freak, but she loves the Monkees.
The Monkees was a lot like the Banana Splits. They were like the Banana Splits only with people.
Oh, boy.
You know where
Here
they would
go.
Run around in fast motion? Yeah, that's right. You dropped that on me, did you?
We will have another podcast coming up at the winter meetings. We will do that, and then Bert and I will be, because we do all the holiday editions, so we'll be back together before Christmas time.
I'll look forward to that.
Do you? Will we do it from your construction site? From Hopefully. The bottom of what used to be Bert's pool.
If it's not done by then, I'm moving out. Oh,
there might be some people that are pushing for that.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Nice to see you. Thank you very much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me at the estate. I love what you've done with the place.
Wanted to make sure that you got some peace and quiet for a moment.
This is the quietest it's been for 2 months. I was a little disappointed not to see the pictures in the guest house that you were tweeting out earlier this year hanging up.
We're about ready to do some work there, so... Our place is going to be a construction site soon enough. So.
The controversial photos or the artwork that you were hanging
I
in
wouldn't
the walls.
Say it was controversial.
You got a segment or two out of it with Jim Duquette, I noticed, on the radio show.
It's because Jim has never seen a movie. Any.
Is that true?
Any. Pretty close.
I remember Tim Kirchin told me for his entire life he had never seen The Godfather. Much like some other people. But because he doesn't like to watch violent movies. So he finally watched it.
And what did he think? Too violent?
It was great. I don't know why I waited that long.
And that's the part of the program where Bert name drops. Up next, Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs will join us as we talk about the D-backs farm system heading into 2020. Well, as part of our Hot Stove podcast today, we have a chance to visit with Tempe's own Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs. He is the lead prospect analyst there, or as they like to call him, the lead prospect analyst. Eric, along with Kylie McDaniel, have put together the latest Diamondbacks prospect list, which was released just last week. And boy, Eric, it's amazing how things have changed, hasn't it, in just the last 3 years from what the D-backs top group of prospects looks like to where then to now.
Yeah, really the change has occurred over even a shorter span of time because you had the best draft class in baseball last June and then everyone that they netted at the trade deadline. So it's really taken shape over just the last 6 months or so in a real way. And yeah, it's one of the deeper systems and has a ton of sexy young high upside prospects that a year from now could be, we're talking about, like, you know, the global top 20, top 50 prospects in all of baseball.
That's pretty incredible when you start thinking about that. I want to go back to the draft because I know we talked at the draft a little bit before it, a little bit after it, about, you know, what the Diamondbacks could do. But what, in your estimation, made it such a good draft? Because I know historically when teams have had, you know, 10 of the top 60 picks, or in their case, what is it, 8 of the top 100, they haven't always hit home runs. And granted, we don't know what these players are going to end up becoming quite yet, but certainly the perception in the industry has been soaring. So what was it that they did so well?
Well, I think that they properly assessed the signability of some of the high scorers, especially Blake Walston, who's a Boris client, who they took with one of their late first round, like the comp area picks. So that was big. They diversified. There's a good mix of college and high school throughout the entire draft class. And then the thing that they did on some of the stuff they did on day three, there were some overslot high schoolers like Avery Short, Brock Jones. You know, there was still money left over for them to target some interesting high schoolers on day three and really round out the class on that day, as opposed to sort of, you know, blowing the whole pool on days one and two, like some of the other teams did. And that's, you know, that speaks to the scouting staff's ability to assess signability and also cast a wide net over the course of the spring so that they had enough players that they liked at certain numbers so they could feel good about putting that money somewhere on day three.
I know you guys aren't doing your rankings overall yet, and everybody loves a good ranking list, but safe bet to say that they're going to be one of the top five systems going into next season as it stands right now?
I think so. Certainly on just the raw number of players, they're going to be in that top handful of teams. The way we line up farm systems is – Craig Edwards, who's another writer at our site, he did some historical research and found what the monetary value of prospects at each future value tier is. And so that we, as a way of trying to apply some amount of objectivity to the process, we like to try to convert things to dollars because it's a sound common denominator. And when things like draft picks and international bonus slots and players who make varying amounts of money are being traded, it helps to try to convert things to a dollar amount to use as a common denominator as a way of weighing things. We had the D-backs as the fifth ranked system at the end of the year based on the monetary value of the system. And I think our offseason update had them more or less the same, maybe a little bit better. Corbin Carroll moved up. Taylor Widener, John Duplantier moved down. So some of that stuff on balance will be interesting to see, you know, when we have all the systems done and we can properly line them up. I would expect them to be, if not in the top five, then very close to that that artificial sort of arbitrary range.
Obviously, I think we're probably most familiar with the names at the top of the list. Obviously, Dalton Varsho and Alec Thomas both made the Futures game this past summer, and they've had plenty of accolades that have come their way. Geraldo Perdomo showed pretty well in the fall league, but there's a couple other names that are worth getting into near the top of the list. And Christian Robinson is, I guess if you're a prospect fan, Christian Robinson is probably a household name, and certainly if you're a Diamondbacks fan, he is. You guys have him rated as the top prospect. What did you see in you know, his run at Hillsborough and then his first taste of full season ball that got you excited about where Robinson could end up?
It's a combination of two things. The first thing is some of the components of the swing and the feel to hit that were just fine but not adding value. They weren't like totally competent yet. His first little bit of time in the States, that stuff got better. The fact that he was performing as a teenager in a college league in the Northwest League, and then during his little bit of time at low A, was very encouraging as far as solidifying our confidence in his feel to hit. The other thing is now we've got some more measurable data at the site. We're sourcing average and max exit velocities that are on the board now. And what Christian is doing in that regard for a 19-year-old is kind of nuts. The average exit velo at the big league level is about 88 miles per hour. Christian's already hitting the ball 92 miles per hour on average, maxing out around 109, 110 miles per hour off the bat, which is above the big league average. And again, he's 19. He's stayed lean so far. He still has a chance to play center field for a while before he fills out and likely moves to a corner. But with that extra bulk is probably going to come even more power. So, you know, on balance, that will be fine. And again, it's just, it's a degree of confidence thing, given that he was, you know, that class, a lot of that, the teenage class that was in the AZL 2 seasons ago, the Perdomo, Alec Thomas group, they were sent right to the Midwest League last spring, and Christian was left back in extended, and he worked to close that gap with his performance in the Northwest League. So that was encouraging. And those are the things that we pushed him up to the 55 future value tier, which is the type of like on average, that's the type of player who's considered at pick one in a draft. Like that's the type of player who goes in the top handful of picks every year in the draft. And that's the type of talent we're talking about here.
You know, and when you bring that up, and it's great on Fangraphs, and if you go to the prospect list and then go to the board, you can see some of this information. That the average exit velocity and the max exit velocity for Corbin Carroll, last year's top pick, are pretty similar. Now they get to it a little differently, right? Carroll is not a big dude. Robinson looks like Daryl Strawberry physically. Like what about Corbin Carroll has allowed him to kind of tap into this? Because it's, I know he was a little bit older and that he's already 19, but man, he put on a pretty good show in the Northwest League.
Yeah, man. I was surprised when I was sourcing this data and this is what came back, because he is a diminutive young guy. He's small. Like, he is narrow in the waist. If you look at I've met Corbin Carroll's parents, and he's built more like his mom than his dad. His dad's big. His dad's like 6'3". His mom is wee, and Corbin looks more like her. But he packs a wallop, and I don't know that he's going to ever really hit for big in-game power, because the swing is not really geared for that kind of lift. He doesn't really clear those hips and pull the ball very often. But the quality of contact is exceptional, and it just comes from his ability to rotate. He's just got an efficient athletic swing that punishes the baseball. He's got good barrel accuracy. He does square the ball up, and that's going to drive some of the high-end contact as well. I don't know if it's over the fence launch. I don't know if you want to change this kid to try to instill that in the swing, if it's already working as well as it has. This guy's done nothing but rake his entire amateur career and did it again last year. So I don't know if you want to proactively tweak it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, sort of thing. But yeah, man, he just, it's surprising. We could see, obviously, he hit all through high school, and we were confident that he was going to continue to perform at that level. We had him way high on our draft list as an amateur because of that, and because we're confident in him not only staying in center but being quite good there. But yeah, I was surprised that the exit velos are where they are.
I think the other name that was in that top handful of players, and you have them, you use the scouting scale, you've got, what, half a dozen players in the Diamondbacks organization that are rated as average or better major leaguers, which is a really high number and really impressive. But I think the one that maybe would, if unless you were the most ardent of D-backs prospect followers, that may have gotten your attention is Yover Piguero. You know, I had a chance to see him in instruction extended a couple of years ago, and the tools are pretty exciting with him. But you have him virtually in a deadlock with Geraldo Perdomo. So what was it that Piguero did this year that got so many people on board with him?
Yeah, the stat line in the Pioneer League, you just kind of toss that away. There have been plenty of hitters who put up goofy Pioneer League numbers at altitude. It's really an offensive friendly environment, so you just toss that stuff out. But the combination of the athleticism, what that translates to on the defensive side, which is an above average defender at short, potentially, and then combine that with the power on contact and the contact ability. And the contact ability really comes from how short he is back to the baseball. It's like almost impossible to beat this guy with velocity, because there's just like no length to the swing, But at the same time, he's still hitting the ball hard because of the power and the strength in the hands and the wrist. And so the guy who it reminds me of, both from a physical standpoint, like the body and the natural ability to, you know, catch velocity, is Gene Segura. And so, like, Segura has filled out in such a way that he is not a great defensive shortstop. And I suppose that exists, the potential for that exists here with Peguero, that he might thicken. This is like a type of high-waisted, big butt, thick in the thighs. Like, he might slow down. But I believe in the bat-to-ball skills and that he's going to play somewhere up the middle, on the middle infield. So yeah, like, we're just confident that the potential for the hit tool, the chance that the swing, this feel for loft and power comes with time, and that combined with that, he's going to stay on the middle infield. Like, those, what more is there to like?
Yeah.
So there are some – he's a little immature on the field. In comparing and contrasting him and Perdomo, Perdomo is very polished as a hitter. His strike zone discipline is excellent, much better than Peguero's is. He's just a headier player. But Peguero's physical tools are absolutely on that level.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's so interesting, is I think that they're really different. I mean, you hit on – I mean, I think one of the reasons why the organization and why scouts are excited about Perdomo is because of that strike zone discipline. I mean, he doesn't chase very often. It's not like he's a thoroughly passive hitter. I mean, he'll attack a first pitch too. But is it safe to say that maybe, like, while he's steadier and more polished – that he doesn't have maybe the same explosion to his tools that Peguero does?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it might come for Perdomo still. As we were sourcing exit velos, the thing that was interesting about Perdomo is that during the early parts of the season, his were down in like the Billy Hamilton area, like the bot towards the bottom of the scale. And then throughout the Arizona Fall League, they were closer to average. He was averaging 87 off the bat in fall league, and only about 80, 82 during the course of the summer. So that physical ability is starting to come, especially from with his left-handed swing. Perdomo's right-handed swing is still not quite where it needs to be. And so, yes, I would characterize Perdomo as safer, a more low to medium variance type of prospect, whereas Peguero is more the boomer bust type, the high or extreme variance type.
Who was the guy that maybe surprised you the most in the system? I mean, you ranked it. You're not beholden to keeping 30 guys on a list or whatever. I mean, you have 47 guys that are graded with you know, some major league or close to major league grades on them. Who was the one that was maybe the biggest surprise in the group this year?
Levi Kelly. I was not a big Levi Kelly fan when he was in high school. He was a like softer, mature-bodied, violent, just out of control, relief-only prospect for me. And then as we worked on the list, I had people tell me that they thought he was the best pitching prospect in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Has totally remade his physique, has one of the better bodies in the system now. The delivery is still pretty wonky. But it is perhaps the best breaking ball in the entire system, one of the better breaking balls in the minors, full stop. It has that Brad Lidge type of shape and movement to it, that just elevator slider that just drops straight down. And even when he was like trying to drop that in for strikes, when he was releasing it early and it was sort of sailing on him into the middle and upper parts of the zone, it still has the kind of depth to it that Midwest League hitters were struggling to touch at all. That's the type of mistake pitch that hitters should be crushing, even in just in low A, they should be taking advantage of that. But there's just something about the amount of movement that breaking ball has that doesn't seem to matter. He's getting away with mistakes. It is that level pitch. And so that is the guy who, as we did it, moved up the list the most. We felt pretty good about where this list was coming into the offseason, that we weren't going to have to change it much. And that did turn out to be the case. But Kelly was the guy who moved the most between where it was resting at the end of the year and where we were when we published it.
Yeah, that rotation that could be at Visalia to open next year with Kelly Tabor, Matt Tabor, who was a third rounder a couple of years ago, and then Luis Frias, who dominated in Hillsboro, and the numbers were probably better than the command showed in Kane County, but Frias might have bigger stuff than both of those guys. I mean, that's a potential really exciting rotation in High A this year.
Yeah, I agree. And then Dre Jamison, who they took with one of those comp round picks as well, is a draft-eligible sophomore out of Ball State. I'd expect to see him at Visalia in some capacity during some part of the year. Tommy Henry, the lefty out of Michigan, who we have a little bit further down the list. His velocity was up and down last year, depending on there were some circumstances there that might have dictated the quality of the fastball. So that guy, with, you know, totally healthy and being used in a more regimented fashion, the velocity might really spike next year. And if that's the case, he'll certainly be at Visalia as well. There's so much depth to this group that most of the affiliates are going to be well stocked with talent. Ryan Nelson, who they gave $1.1 million to, mm-hmm. As a pure reliever out of Oregon. Once he is just left in a bullpen, his stuff might explode, and we might be looking at a late inning bullpen guy, and I expect him to be at Visalia as well. So yeah, it's going to be a really fantastic group all throughout the minors.
You know, as excited as we are about the future and the way the system shakes up now, the present is something that the Diamondbacks haven't been willing to punt on. You know, they have gone through this building of the organization while winning, you know, having a winning record each of the last three seasons and winning with 85 games this past year. And they've made it known that that's not good enough, that they want to be better than that. But part of having a good farm system is being able to make trades that can help your major league team. So where are those depth spots you feel like that the Diamondbacks could tap into if, in fact, they want to make a move this winter to be able to potentially add something that impacts the, say, the lineup?
I think the first specific area is what is going to happen with these upper-level middle infielders who are essentially going to be competing to replace Wilmer Flores, right? So you have Andy Young, who they got back as part of the return for Paul Goldschmidt from St. Louis. And you have Domingo Leyba, who's been in the system for quite a while, switch-hitting middle infielder with contact skills, mm-hmm. right? So Andy Young is the thumper who can't really play very good defense. That's the Wilmer Flores role to a T. And then Leyba's switch hitter, contact skills, runs a little bit better, can maybe play shortstop a little bit better than Young can. Leyba was given a fourth option exemption. That'll be valuable for teams. So I think if the D-backs can find a team who is looking for roster equilibrium, you know, like the Blue Jays have picked off a bunch of Astros and Yankees players who those teams just didn't have room for. If there's someone out there who wants to give one of those two guys a shot every day at the big leagues next year, then one of those guys is eminently tradable. And then the other factor from a broader perspective is the 40-man stuff. When is a 40-man crunch coming for the D-backs? When some of these guys who they drafted within the last couple of years have to be put on the 40-man or else be vulnerable to the Rule 5 draft. That's like, later throughout the course of 2020, those names are like Pavin Smith, Drew Ellis, Seth Beer. You know, those are corner, heavy body cornerback guys. There's just redundancy there. They have to be put on the 40-man at some point soon. Moving some of those guys would seem logical to me. And so those are the two things that I would say are going to drive who the D-backs move, is the 40-man crunch and positional redundancy at the upper levels. Guys, they have to churn some of these guys away to big league teams that can use them, rebuilding teams that want to try to see what Pavin Smith, Drew Ellis, Seth Beer can do every day at the big league level, even though they can't necessarily crack the D-backs lineup. And then you flip those guys for guys whose 40-man timelines are a little bit longer down the line, younger players who don't have to be put on the 40-man for another 2-3 years. That is what teams like Tampa and the Padres have done well over the last several years to keep the farm system flush with higher upside younger talents while they keep the assets that are maturing and leave them on the big league roster.
That's interesting. That's an interesting take. And I'll be curious, too, to see that. I mean, they certainly haven't been afraid to deal from the complex levels in the past to add to the major league roster. And we've seen that. I wonder if there are some guys that have, you know, fairly high ceilings but are a ways away that they would be willing to use to try and improve the major league roster for 2020 as well, because they're going to try and compete. I'm very curious to watch how it plays out. It's nice to have depth of the organization, though, to be in that position. So, Eric, we appreciate the time. Hope you have a great holidays, and we will see you real soon, my friend. All right, that'll do it for us on another edition of D-backs Hot Stove. Next edition coming out during the winter meetings, which start, December 8th in San Diego. If there's news that breaks between now and then, we'll get it for you here. Be listening to your D-backs podcast feed. Remember to go vote for the All-MLB team, MLB.com/All-MLB. Get your votes in for Ketel Marte and Eduardo Escobar. And if you're looking for a great holiday gift, dbacks.com/holiday. 31 games, $99, every game in March, April, or May, including opening day. So go and check that out, and hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And thanks so much for joining us on another edition of D-backs Hot Stove.